podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hi, Mike. Great to see you. It is Nat and Mike Tuesdays for a change.
Hey, you know, and I like Tuesdays because I think it gives me, you know, just a little bit of time to cogitate over what I've seen over the weekend. Plus, it lets us do Monday Night Football, which gives you the full picture, obviously, on the week stuff. And so I'm bright and bushy-tailed right now, and you must be jet-lagged from Tallahassee.
Jet-lagged to hell. So for starters, don't use words like cogitate when I'm in a jet-lag state. Secondly, what is our policy on wearing sunglasses on the pod? Am I allowed to put those on at some stage during it?
Yeah, that's like my old thing. Oh, your eyes are red. It's like you should see them from this side.
Yeah, I am jet lagged to, what's the technical term? Jet lagged to shit, I think is the technical term. Back from Tallahassee. Shout out to everyone at FSU. What an experience that was. We were behind the scenes. Ben and I behind the scenes, checking everything out. And the game day against Miami. What an experience it was. Courtesy of our friends, of course, the Aer Lingus College Football Classic. We are going to be releasing a pod all about our travels, all about our trip. Very, very soon. Yeah, really looking forward to that.
And did you get to go to classes with the scholar athletes?
disappointingly, no. I would have fancied my chances there, getting one or two questions right. You could get to go to our high school game on the Friday, though, which is proper Friday.
Wow. Yeah. And that's big stuff in Florida, too.
It was a playoff game. It was Florida High, and they won it, which was terrific. And the brilliant thing about that was, so Ben and I zipped off to go to the game. And it was, given how big high school football is in the state, and it was a playoff game, we were thinking, is it going to be like the playoff game that Ben went to in Texas a couple of years back? He was telling me where it was about 20,000. Wasn't nearly that big, but it was huge, huge game, of course, for the town. Everything you'd imagine. So rocked up, and the concession stand that was selling, you know, food and drink, one of the local business people had paid for all the kids to eat all night for free. That was rolling on. So I love that. Well,
Ben tried to pass himself off as a high school student.
Well, Ben was more excited by the fact that we then got on to stand on the sideline. So there was, as you picture it, there under the Friday night lights, two stands. The away team brought their marching band and a few of the fans, but the home stand on the other side of the field. So opposite sides of the sidelines, right? And then it was just surrounded by trees. Beautiful scene. We got to stand on the sidelines, and Ben suddenly tapped me and said, "Oh my God, that's Charlie Ward." Charlie Ward was
Florida State all-timer
Heisman Trophy winner, played what, a decade in the NBA, didn't go to the NFL because he said if he wasn't going to be drafted in the first round, he wasn't going to play in the NFL. So went to the NBA. So we chatting away to Charlie Ward and his mates. I mean, it was this fairy tale stuff. It was brilliant. So we had a great trip, and we are going to be releasing a pod, as I say, very, very soon. We've pushed out quite a lot of stuff over on our social channels as well. YouTube too. If you're not following us on our brand new YouTube channel, The NC Show, go check all that out. But that is all to come. We are all about the NFL. And of course, a bit of a kind of hybrid show today. We'll look back at week 10 and one or two eyes on the week 11 slate, I think, Mike, because there are some cracking games coming your way. Let's start with Monday Night Football. As you say, it's great that we get to do that. The Broncos edging the Bills. A hugely important win in the AFC East, of course. Miami, sitting back watching that play out, are going to be thrilled with another defeat for the Bills. And there's hope for the Broncos as well, right? Because 4-5, they're kind of still alive, aren't they?
The wild card race in the AFC is going to be crazy, especially for the seventh spot, you know, and strength of schedule comes into play now. I think, you know, it's hard to talk about it without looking at that. And teams like Cincinnati, you know, that's one of the games we'll talk about later, I think. But, you know, teams like Cincinnati are going to face a harder run in than teams in the South and perhaps even in the West, you know, where the Chiefs will be fairly comfortable and the Chargers are showing signs of the usual Chargeroni second half of the season. And the Raiders are not really that good. I mean, they've had this boost with Antonio Pierce, but their schedule starts getting tough this week coming up. So, yeah, so there's a lot of possibilities out there for teams. And Miami, obviously, with the Buffalo loss, is running away in the East. Plus, in December, the four of their last five games are at home. And I've made a big point of this a couple of times, including right at the beginning of the season, where we thought Buffalo would be in that mix and possibly the Jets and even New England. But it would be a huge advantage to Miami to be playing four of those last five games at home. And you had to figure they were going to win the majority of them. And so I think Miami's looking good for a playoff spot for sure. And
if you look at those records, it is really condensed compared to the NFC, which is a little bit more binary and more clear cut. So the Colts 5-5, the Raiders, as you say, after that win over the Jets on Sunday Night Football, 5-5, the Bills 2, the Texans and the Bengals, both 5-4. So all of that crew are kind of bunched together, probably for one wild card spot, if they're lucky, right? Given the way the North's looking.
Yeah. Well, again, in the North, you can also see some self-destruction. That's one of the problems. You know, I don't know how Pittsburgh can continue to win. They've been outgained in every single game they've played, you know, and it's a strange phenomenon for them. But yeah, you know, again,
we often see teams, don't we? The Minnesota Vikings of last season are the most famous example that there are teams that statistically should not be at the top table, but they, you know, almost every year we find a team that, I remember that Packers team of 4 or 5 years ago, they were what, 13-3, I think it was before the 17, you know, 14-2, like crazily good record, but they were, maybe the Steelers are that kind of team this year.
Yeah, there was one year, a couple of years before that, where the Packers, I think, they won a game unexpectedly to go to like 6-6. And I looked at the schedules and said, they're going to beat Detroit in the last game of the season and make the playoffs at 9-7 or whatever it was. Yeah, yeah. And that's exactly kind of what happened. You know, if you sometimes hitting your stride at the right time makes up for a lot. And sometimes luck runs out. But Minnesota is a good example of that this year. You know, they've won five in a row since losing Justin Jefferson. Then they lost Kirk Cousins. And Josh Dobbs, you know, has played great. So, you know, I mean, I think Josh Dobbs is one of the big stories of the week, obviously. Russ Wilson playing a bit like Russ Wilson.
Yeah.
Although the thing I took away from this week, and it wasn't only the Denver game, there were a couple of other instances. I think the Jags had one with Christian Kirk. The safest, best play offensively in football.
Tell us.
Is the long pass underthrown. That's what got the Denver the win. Jerry Jeudy beat Talon Johnson, you know, who usually latches on to guys, you know, but he beat him off the line of scrimmage. He had him by about 2 yards down the field, and Wilson underthrows him. So he stops and Johnson runs into him. And Johnson, to his credit, got his hands out, not so much to interfere with him as to just not knock him over and draw the obvious flag. And I think that's what he was arguing with the referee. But the flag comes. It's a 36-yard gain. You know, you remember back to the Ravens when Joe Flacco used to do this with Torrey Smith all the time, you know, just close his eyes, heave the ball downfield high and short, and Torrey Smith would start coming back from it and get the penalty. And
that's my style of quarterback. If you chuck me in the NFL, that's basically what I would do on pretty much every play. So let's look at the Monday Night Football game, the other big stories from other than, well, Russell Wilson's looking more like potentially Russell Wilson of old, and it could still come together. The Broncos kind of alive at 4-5. The Bills, Mike. It feels like we talk about the Bills every week because, understandably, they are far from the Bills that we thought they'd be this season. Now, there are a lot of reasons for that. Injuries have had a big part to play in that, even by the terms of every team having to deal with injuries. They've had crucial injuries defensively that have affected them. Josh Allen is clearly having a poor season by his high standards. So here's the question. There is one eventually. Is this just a short-term regression, as in he's just having bad form, the situation around him, the pressure's increasing week on week? Or is it more to it than that?
I think there's more to it than that because, and I hate to bring Ken Dorsey into the play, but I get the sense that Allen is, his play is not as well controlled as it was when Dable was the offensive coordinator there, and that they're not taking advantage of what they get. So it seemed to me last night that when the running game was working and absent the fumble. They lost two fumbles, obviously, and Cook fumbled a second time for him and picked it up on the bounce. But if he had not fumbled it, he would have scored a touchdown on that run. The bounce gave the defense time to catch up to him. But when the running game was working and you pull the defense in, you still have to double team Diggs. You have to pay attention to Davis, but it leaves your tertiary options wide open if you run it right. And they had a couple of plays to Kincaid, to Shakir. And that's the way their offense, I think, should be going. You know, they're just not able to execute that enough times. They had the running game working well, Latavius Murray as well as Cook. They were both running well. And that surprised me a bit, but the offensive line looked really good. And defensively, they didn't play a bad game. You know, it's probably the best one they've played since Milano and DaQuan Jones, both went out. So, you know, I think it's something like that. And, you know, I mean, he's not Jameis Winston, say. It's not like when Winston
wildly
came in.
Erratic, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's another game we should probably talk about. But, you know, but he's not wildly erratic. But at the same time, you really have to give him better options than slamming the ball 20 yards down the field. You know, he had a great one, zipped it in to Gabe Davis in the first quarter, I think. And then in three plays later, maybe on third down, he zipped another one in, and it was just too much zip for Gabe Davis to handle it.
It's interesting that just on that, and hearing, you know, piecing together some of your thoughts over the last month or so about it, to me, it's entirely logical that the Bills are having this kind of season. You know, you mentioned those injury losses, obviously Trey Smith as well going down. So this is maybe their three best defensive players, or certainly three of their best defensive players. We knew that's obviously going to impact any team. We knew that when you look relatively at other contending teams and the depth of talent in the receiving or skill positions around the quarterback, the Bills are clearly not at the same level. And they maybe haven't invested. Yes, they got him Diggs, but maybe they haven't invested as much as they should in Allen. And then the Daboll factor that you mentioned, that he's never really been the same since Daboll left. And the mechanics are the same, the tendencies are the same, but the control, not just of the play calling, but the management of Allen, you can understand why you're seeing this regression.
Yeah, it may be too that they've gotten away from running Josh Allen as much.
Sure.
Now that may be a safe thing to do, because you don't really want to risk him. But one of the things, and you saw it with Dable and Daniel Jones when they were successful last year, he was running Daniel Jones a lot. Designed runs, you know, not scrambling. And that helps open up things for the quarterback in the same sense that the running game being efficient does. So maybe that's the other thing that they need to get back to, despite the obvious risk to Josh Allen if they do.
Just on that, so he's had 246 rushing yards this season, Allen. Last year, in total, he had 762.
Yeah.
Not on pace for it at all, I should say.
It's obvious that they're not running, you know, they aren't running designed runs for him the way they did. And most of that 200 yards is probably scrambles. Mm. And he's had to scramble a lot.
I get it. I get the protectionism, but you know how I feel about that kind of thing. Mike, you dance with the one that brung you, right? You just got to roll with it. Let's talk about the Josh Dobbs effect that next, because the Broncos have the Vikes up next in Sunday Night Football, isn't it, this week? Week 11 Sunday Night Football.
It's a good matchup.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, Josh Dobbs is becoming, maybe he is, the number one story this season. I mean, when are we starting the Josh Dobbs for MVP conversation?
Well, he'll be behind CJ Stroud in the new additions to the MVP race. But I mean, what they've done is amazing. And you know, last year everybody said, okay, you know, we know the story from last year. They were the luckiest team probably in our experience in terms of, you know, getting a record from games where they were outgained or, you know, and this year they've won five in a row without Justin Jefferson, as I said. Then Kirk Cousins goes down, and you know, Dobbs comes in he doesn't even know the names of the guys he's throwing to. So they say, but O'Connell's calling the plays and explaining the plays to him.
We've got Kevin O'Connell on the phone for you now, Mike.
Yeah. Kevin's asking it. Well, you remember when, so Dobbs comes in, you know, into the game. He doesn't know the team. He doesn't know the plays. Kevin O'Connell's explaining the plays to him as he talks to him on the headset. And, our buddy Kevin O'Connell from Patriots camp in 2007.
Yeah.
It's funny, you know, to watch those changes. But, you know, they've done a great job, and they had a great win over New Orleans. Where Dobbs still, he'll make mistakes, but he can help you get out of them with his feet, for one thing. And he's very smart. There aren't a lot of mental mistakes. You know, there's physical ones, but we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, you know, NASA, early graduation in astrophysics. You know, there aren't that many guys. And you think about when you throw a pass, you have to understand astrophysics in order to be able to get the parabola right, you know, and get it in.
But where I've been struggling with my throw.
Yeah. I'm being facetious there, but I thought they had a really solid game. And New Orleans lost
Carr went to concussion. Yeah.
Derek Carr's and put in Jameis, and you know, I mentioned Jameis with the Josh Allen thing, but Jameis is an extreme example of that. You know, he had that great half season when Sean Payton was still there, and they kind of kept him in a controlled game.
Right. It's a great comparison, actually. I mean, obviously Allen's the better player, but it's a really, really good comparison in terms of why we're seeing maybe this raw edge of Allen, because he's not being controlled. Let's go to the Passyunk Avenue mailbag for the first time today. Iron Mike. We've got a lot of questions here. We're going to do a bumper mailbag special just to help with the jet lag a little bit. And you'll like the first one, particularly the source of the first question we've got. Mr. Robot has got in touch with us, aren't we?
Our first AI question. Yeah.
He's obviously pals with ChatGPT. He's been picking on the Edge Rush show. I'm actually thrilled that my lock of the week was Dallas to cover, which came in, and ChatGPT picked the Patriots. So I think ChatGPT is...
You're winning there. Did you have 17 and a half? Or
I did 16 and a half. Yeah,
16 and a half. Okay.
Still would have covered. There we go. The Cowboys straight up was my entry lock at 10 to 1 on. Right. Mr. Robots asks, as a big Saints fan, I've been disgruntled with a faltering offense, and with Carr now injured and Winston lighting a spark when he came in. Well, he certainly did that, but he also threw two picks as well, two picks. Should the Saints consider rolling with Winston for the next couple of months, or is that impossible given their commitment to Carr? I don't see this, and thanks for the question, Mr. Robert. I don't see this as a difficult one. I think they'll definitely roll with Carr, won't they? I mean, it's not as if he's been Tannehill levels of disappointment. There's a huge amount of pressure to yank him. I mean, he's been okay. He's been fine, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think they do. And if I remember right, he's got a big contract, but it's one they can get out of after next season.
Okay.
And I'm not sure what Winston is signed for, whether he's on a 1 or 2 year deal. But what you said is correct. And, you know, remember when Winston was a starter in Tampa for the full season and he had the 30-30 touchdowns and interceptions, plus I think he had 8 or 9 lost fumbles in that season. That's the risk you take. And as I said, they played him in a more controlled game for half a year and they got great results from him. But when he came back from injury, you know, he wasn't quite the same, or maybe Peyton wasn't quite the same, and now Peyton's gone. They want to be conservative, more or less, offensively. I thought Olave looked really good in that game Sunday, but they're not going to wide open break things up. And yeah, he's got more downfield arm, but he makes mistakes, and I think they'd prefer probably to stay with Carr for the same reason they went out and signed him, when they could have made Winston their starter. Yeah. And given him the dough instead.
Well, they're 5-5, the Saints. By this week, of course, they'll be back week 12 against the Falcons. So they think Carr will be as well, because he's in concussion protocol. So they're expecting him, although big or longer term injuries to Lattimore and Michael Thomas. So they could be out for a little while, denting their playoff ambitions, you'd think. Let's move to Frankfurt, because if the Vikes game was another wild game featuring Minnesota, maybe not so much with the Frankfurt Colts game. We were watching it, of course, bright and breezy on Sunday, you know, 9:30 local time in in Florida. And we were frustrated because we had, this is Ben and I and the crew out there, we had a car transfer picking us up at about 10. So we're thinking, oh, damn, we're gonna miss the game. We'll try and get it on Westwood One or something. We're gonna miss the game. And as we were driving towards Orlando, watching on NFL.com the three and out sesh that was going on. We were thinking, we're not missing a thing here. James Gregory's got in touch with us. Thanks for this, James. At the NC Show, incidentally, is how you get in touch with us on the show and all different social channels and indeed their YouTube channels. I say, go follow us on that, the NC Show. James asks, is Mac Jones's performance in Germany the worst quarterback performance overseas since Cleo Lemon in the first London game, which of course you and I were there for, I might, the Cleo Lemon Bowl, we affectionately refer to.
2007 was a great year for us in bad quarterbacks. It was not a good game. It's hard to apportion the blame properly. And it's hard also to put that into the context of what appears to be Bill Belichick, just not being able to keep a team focused on the way he wants them to play football. The defense, which is down to seeds and stems. I mean, you know, the backup for Juwan Bentley, Wilson, goes out in the first series of the game. So now they're on like their third inside linebacker. They're still playing defensively all right. Obviously they held the Indy what was a one touchdown game. But everything else is going wrong. Now, what's wrong with Mac Jones? Well, is it that the offensive line is awful, especially at the tackles? You know, they knew that coming into the season. Trent Brown was going to be their only really returning tackle. And how did they address it? They drafted a center and they drafted two guys who were to play guard. They traded for guys who were projects for other teams. So, okay, that's great if you get him for a seventh round pick and you're not planning on playing him until next year, but you can't stick him in the starting lineup, you know, Tiberian, whatever his name is, and Huntley. And then you get Calvin Anderson back, who you cut years ago, and Denver didn't want him in the end.
How does that differ from Belichick's MO?
I think the biggest difference is that he doesn't have Dante Scarnecchia as an offensive line coach.
Right.
And that's part of the problem, you know, and he doesn't have Tom Brady as a quarterback, which makes what you want from your offensive line a bit different in terms, especially in terms of pass protection, because you know Brady's going to get rid of the ball quickly and he's going to make his lines look better. They never had a lot of big name guys. You know, the biggest, Logan Mankins, was probably the only first round pick one of the other tackles was a first round pick too, but you know, Matt Light was a second round pick, Vollmer was a second round pick. And the rest of the guys were Joe Andrewsies and Brandon Gorans and guys like that that they picked up on the street. But you need a good coach to be able to do that.
Yeah, it's a great point.
Secondly, you want to be a running team. So, okay, your pass protection is not going to be good, but Mac Jones, you know, it isn't Tom Brady. He doesn't get rid of the ball quickly, wants to be sure of the throw before he throws it, can't run much. In this game, you could see those first four sacks in a row on the first four third downs. He dropped back to pass. He dropped his head early on all four of them, which means even if he's stepping forward in the pocket, he can't see who's coming from the sides, and he can't see if anyone's downfield to receive. His receiving core is crap. They've made bad valuations on draft picks like Tyquan Thornton. They've made bad trade decisions, or not trade, but letting Jacoby Myers go and bringing in Juju, who is, for some reason, is not doing what he did last year for Kansas City. And they paid big money to get, you know, Nelson Agholor and Devontae Parker, you know, and guys who just have not delivered.
Haven't turned up. So bring it all together, then. If we're comparing, as we often will, concentrate on situation specifically when you're looking at a quarterback's trajectory, it's no wonder that Mac Jones is having a bad season if that's what he's got to contend with. So is it more the environment, the situation he's in, more than the player himself?
Well, that's the big question. You know, how good was he as a rookie? Well, he played under a pretty controlled environment, you know, and Josh McDaniels was the offensive coordinator. Last year, they actually weren't that far away from the playoffs, and it wasn't Mac Jones that kept them from that. You know, it was that crazy play with Jacoby Myers. which may be why he's gone. You know, that crazy lateral that was turned into a loss. Yeah. Ramondre Stevenson had a crucial fumble. You know, but this year, and they got rid of, you know, the power combo of Joe Judge and Matt Patricia. Joe Judge is back to coaching special teams, and their special teams is crap, which is never, you know, a Belichick team is supposed to be great on special teams.
Yeah.
So I think it's a combination of things, and I can't tell whether Bill O'Brien's play calling is willfully, you know, it's as if Bill Belichick wants to break George Halas's coaching record. He's going to do it by coaching like George Halas, where a forward pass is considered something extremely dangerous. And you know,
ChatGPT could, if you've got the basic version, can only pull information from up to, I think it's 2021, maybe January 22. But anyway, then it tells you that. Is that what's happening with Bill O'Brien? Can only dial up plays up
to 1987? Possible, you know, but you know, they're so predictable. And you know, two runs and then throw a screen pass. Don't go downfield. You know, maybe they have no faith in Mac Jones downfield. He made a couple of good throws, mostly to Hunter Henry over the middle of the field. And then that the interception at the end of the game was a Carson Wentz in Indianapolis kind of interception. Where are you thinking? Well, you know, And he's got Gesicki. It's a perfect play call, you know. Yeah. So okay, give Bill O'Brien the points. Gesicki's open on the back of the end zone.
Yeah,
and it's like he tries to push the ball to him and not get it over the defenders who are 3 yards, 4 yards in front of him. He's open because they're in front of him. So you have to drill the ball to him or get it over them. It was just a massive failure. And then Bill, this season is so disgruntled. I mean, everyone gets punished, you know. Yeah, you got to sit him down because that was just execrable. But Bailey Zappi is your backup and he's going to do better, you know. You know, Pop Douglas is probably their best receiver. He's certainly the only one who seems to have any explosive qualities. And he was benched the first time he fumbled the ball. He was benched for two weeks. Jack Jones got benched. And I know Jack Jones is a character issue, but they knew it when they drafted him. That's why he was in the fourth round. He's gone now. They cut him with no recompense. When they, you know, J.C. Jackson will probably be cut with no recompense in the next couple of weeks. Boutte, who was another guy who had character problems and went to the seventh round, but looks like he might be able to contribute, but he's not being used very much. Juju had two pre-snap penalties. One of them I still can't figure out because he wasn't stopped from motion, but nobody else was in motion, so he doesn't have to stop. But anyway, he got the penalty. He got an offside. He's a wide receiver. Wide receivers should not go offside.
There's only vets like him as well. The cool heads prevail in theory. But all right, so messy for Mac and for the Patriots. A tough day at the office, but a bounce back game for a quarterback who's also been under fire in recent weeks, Brock Purdy, and their 49ers shellacking of the Jags. Yeah. I'll go to the mailbag actually again. And Mike, internet, you're going to pick your favorite question. The favorite question of the week from the Passy Young Avenue mailbag wins a £25 tab to Passy Young Avenue. So,
that'll cover me for my first drink.
Exactly. I'll have four tequilas. What are you guys having? That's my Mike at the Thanksgiving. Incidentally, there's still chance to win a table at our Thanksgiving watch along, where me, Mike, and the crew will be down watching games. Come hang, chat to us, have a beer at the Passy Young Avenue in Waterloo. If you want to win tickets to that, because it's sold out, you follow us on YouTube. So our YouTube channel, the Nat Coombs Show, the NC Show, follow us on YouTube and let the guys, Seb and the guys, know on social that you're following us. Just screen grab it and tag us in it. And we'll go into a draw. We're going to announce the winner on Friday, Mike, on Edge Rush on Friday.
Oh, that's cool. You're like when I was a kid, WLIB in Harlem. We used to have the fun club and it gave away money and prizes.
Record that. We're going to record that separately. We'll drop that each time you mention it. I love that. That's also going to be my ringtone from now on, Mike doing that. Let's go to the Passy Young mailbag. This might be your favorite question of the week. You never know. Cammy Walker, you could be a winner. Cammy asked, how big of a performance was it from Brock Purdy on Sunday, considering his NFL story so far? Basically down and out, got his chance and took it last year, then under fire, of course, in recent weeks. And it really felt like the tide had turned so quickly on Brock Purdy. Here we were 3-4 weeks ago, MVP and top 10 quarterback. And then everybody was piling in saying, oh, what do we tell you? He's mediocre. He's just a game manager. But that was a very impressive win from the 49ers. So where's Brock Purdy and indeed the San Francisco team in your head right now, Mike? Where are they?
Well, I've liked them, you know, from the start. And I think the big thing this week, the rest helped, obviously. They got Trent Williams back. And if you watch the game, he made some great plays. I mean, his mobility for a guy his size makes such a difference to all that, all the kind of screening and things that they want to do, his ability to get out in front of those plays. Debo was back, and that's huge. They didn't throw to him much, but he had the touchdown on the end around. And Purdy looked good. I mean, yeah. He puts the ball where it's supposed to go, and that in a Shanahan offense is the most important thing. Sure. And he leads Brandon Ayuk to the sidelines. You know, he gets the ball up when it has to be up. He had one incredibly bad. It was a good, great throw. It was a great completion in the end zone to Ayuk. And he sees that Ayuk, he's scrambling and he's under pressure to his right, to his left. And he sees Ayuk going across the back line of the end zone and has a step on the defender, but he can't really drill. He puts it up. And the only reason it got completed was that Kittle was in the end zone and, you know, just in front of Ayuk, which meant the defenders both went for Kittle. So the ball dropped into Ayuk's hands, but it was your classic don't throw back across your body into the middle of the field. You
one
know?
On one. Yeah, yeah.
But it worked. So he got away with that one. But I think basically why he's good is he's perfect for that kind of an offense. You know, maybe he doesn't have the great big arm. You can see him having to kind of wind up to make long throws, but he takes advantage of the motion in the pocket to do that. And he's not brittle the way Jimmy G was.
Right.
You're going to get hit a bit in a Shanahan offense, but usually you've gotten rid of the ball pretty quickly. And he knows where it's going. He understands that too, which is the other important thing with Shanahan is, you know, knowing where your first, second, third options are, because you're often going down to your third option. So I thought it was a great performance, and their defense looked really good. Chase Young's a good addition for them. I think he only had half a sack, but as they were saying on the show, you know, he and Nick Bosa played together at Ohio State. And so, you know, yeah, it's all about high five, you know, that kind of stuff. But yeah, it gives him, he's a more solid pass rusher, or not a more solid defensive end type than Leonard Floyd. Randy Gregory. They're the same guy, Leonard Floyd and Gregory. Yeah, but the tall, thin pass rush specialist. He's more of a guy who can also set the edge, which you kind of need, you know, when you're playing with just four linebackers are dropping into the zones deep.
And they can spell him as well, of course, can't they? It's less pressure away.
Well, that's the thing. When you're in a stone passing situation, that's when you bring Gregory in. And,
right. Yeah, yeah.
Take advantage of his strength. Yeah.
Yeah, makes sense. The so impressive performance, particularly given the opposition, right? Because I think a lot of people fancy the Jags in that spot. But certainly, where we were stateside and obviously being in Florida, a lot of focus on the Jags. And a lot of people fancied them for a win. And on that, Colin has got a touch. Hey, Colin, everyone was saying the Dolphins were frauds last week. What about the Jaguars and the Ravens? He says this week. So Jags, one of those teams that and so many weeks this season, we think we've understood a team. We think we get where they're at, and then they get dispatched. It's the fact they were beaten so comfortably, I think, Mike, is a disappointment.
Yeah, I mean, fraud is, you know, it's like they're the biggest frauds of all time this week. sure. You know, the Jags
get,
were coming off
point,
a bye.
Point, though. Yeah.
Yeah, they were coming off a bye. So it's hard to say that they were, you know, they were frauds from the week before. But they played.
No, I think what he means is that this is a team that's been hyped up. It's like, okay, these guys are going to be deep water playoff contenders. And then, actually, maybe they're not.
Yeah, well, given their division, they probably are. You know, they should be able to win that division, so they'll be in the playoffs. The Ravens, we were all on the Ravens because they had a great win, and then they have a surprising loss. I think Cleveland stymied them more than, you know, Cleveland didn't lead in that game until they won it.
Well, exactly.
But it was the Ravens' game to throw away.
So let's bring these points together, because I think where's Colin?
He missed the Bengals. Colin missed the Bengals. They were everybody's hot team too, and they lost.
That's true. They were. That's a very fair point. Okay, but I think if we're framing this as Super Bowl contenders, we'll call it that, right? And maybe that's a bit of a stretch for the Jags, but I think a lot of people were saying, well, you know, given the division, given they'll cakewalk into the playoffs, can we look at them as that? And this is going to be a really important game, we're told, to see just how good they are. They get blown away. Baltimore, conversely, the strongest team in the AFC, but by the look of it, going into the weekend, 14 points in coasting against the Browns, 14 points up early in the fourth quarter. So now everyone's saying, Mike, well, if you're blowing a lead like that, you're not championship material. Why were they so soft in the fourth quarter?
Oh, well, Cleveland's defense was the biggest problem, I think. And, you know, they had a couple of other things. The blocked field goal was, you know, was bad, you know, because if you're trying a 55-yard field goal, you know, bad enough if you miss it. But if you let it get blocked, it's horrible. And Cleveland's defense is really good. You know, Lamar Jackson couldn't get a running game going, you know, of which he's a big part. And that was the big reason for their win the week before. It's like you're going to play strong teams, which you'll need, which you obviously will be doing in the playoffs. And so you have to be able to adjust to them. I think that's part of the problem with the Jags. I think Kyle Shanahan understood exactly what kind of defense Gus Bradley likes to play and how to attack it. And a lot of teams didn't do that. Because I said a couple of weeks ago, you know, the Jags' actual strength for all the weapons they seem to have is their defense had been playing really well.
So let's just jump back to that point. Explain that to everybody. So what specifically did Shanahan...
Well, Bradley is a classic two deep kind of zone guy, and that's, you know, that's something that that the Niners offense can attack. They know how to find the spots in zones. It's kind of what the Jags did against Buffalo. You know, and for them in the first half, it was the outside spots of the zone. They kept having Calvin Ridley wide open, standing on the sideline with one defender 5-7 yards in front of him and 1 5-7 yards behind him, which is exactly what you want to get when you're splitting a zone, when you make it a case of indecision.
So why wasn't Bradley able to adjust then?
That's an interesting question. Sometimes you just think that you don't have to adjust your scheme. Your players are good enough to be able to adjust individually, to recognize the things that they have to be able to recognize. And that's very hard against the Shanahan kind of offense, because there's so much, what do you call it? What's the stuff that the submarine sends out to deflect torpedoes, to confuse them? You know, there's all this motion and stuff like that to try to confuse you as to what they're actually running and what they're coming back from. I mean, Houston's win against Cincinnati, you know, for all the deserved hype that CJ Stroud will get, you know, it's two weeks in a row with game winning from behind fourth quarter drives. Houston's defense was missing. They were missing a lot of people through injury, and their defense played really well against Joe Burrow, who was kind of forced to run. And you know, there were a couple of drop passes that hurt them. And T. Higgins is out again now, so you know, he's a huge loss for them, because you're going to probably double chase, and that means you need Boyd to make lots of plays, and Boyd will make some plays, but he tends to have a couple of drops, you know, here and there,
which ultimately cost him the game. If you're looking at that in isolation. Okay, there's a ton to get into, so let's roll on. Why don't we get to the NFC playoff race? A little less condensed. The Eagles and the Cowboys, obviously, both looking good in the East. Dallas, they have the Panthers this week after their shellacking of...
Yeah, and what's the question with the Cowboys? The question still is, can they beat a good team?
Sure, yeah. But
they can roll over bad teams. Can they beat a good team?
The Miami syndrome, right, is what the... Yeah. Compare and contrast that. The other game of the weekend, again, one of the games of the season, features the Eagles. Monday Night Football against the Chiefs. That is a mouth-watering affair. Mike, just frame the key matchup, the things you're most looking forward to with that Monday Night Football game.
Well, this season, the Chiefs are basically a defense-first team. It's their defense that's sort of winning games for them. And I think the key matchup is probably A.J. Brown. I'm trying to think of who what's his name? Snead is probably going to be the guy who draws him the most of the time, because he's a bigger kind of corner. And the key always against Baltimore is containing Jalen Hurts. If they decide they have to run him to make plays. Kansas City, the Eagles defense is really strong up front, and that's going to be a problem for the Chiefs offensive line, which hasn't been able to protect Mahomes as well as they'd like to. And he hasn't been able to, but the biggest thing with the Chiefs is the lack of receivers. He doesn't have a number one receiver. He doesn't actually have a really consistent number two receiver. So everything has to go to Kelce. And
to Rashee Rice potentially becoming that.
I think so. He's made some really good catches. You know, if you only watch highlight tapes, he's their number one receiver. But he's not their number one receiver. It's not like they throw to him eight times and he catches eight balls for 150 yards. Part of that is Andy's offense, but I think it's a great matchup.
Actually, just on that, it's a really interesting point you make. If they had an AJ Brown, would we see those kind of numbers from one specific receiver? If AJ Brown was playing for the Chiefs, would Reed change things up?
Oh, a bit. You know, it's a different. It's interesting because AJ Brown and Tyreek Hill are probably the two most what do we call it game changing receivers. The two that tilt the field in favor of their team, but they do it in different ways. And Hill is more of a question of you almost have to double him or have somebody over him to take away the deep ball, and that opens things up for everybody else. And Brown is more, well, when nothing's working for anybody else, just close your eyes and throw it to AJ Brown. He'll make a play wherever he is, you know.
Megatron and, style. That's so true.
But the Chiefs thought they could replace Hill in the aggregate, and that hasn't worked out. You know, none of the McCole Hardman couldn't do it. They brought him back. Kadarius Toney did it for a little while. Sky Moore wasn't really quick. He's not quick enough. He's a kind of cross the middle slot. In my mind, at least, a kind of cross the middle slot guy, and they need to kind of have something that can open up the field behind. And last year, strangely enough, for all that I've trashed Juju with the Patriots, Juju was the answer to that. And he was used more like a second tight end, a slot receiver, a guy moving across the middle. But it gave them that extra threat there. And receivers are so dependent on scheme, on quarterback. Look at Noah Brown. You look at him and think, well, the Cowboys could never use him effectively, and he's turned into a super version in what is basically a modified Shanahan offense for Houston. He's their version of Debo Samuel. I'm not saying Noah Brown is Debo Samuel, but he's basically being used as their version of, since Nico Collins isn't there to do that.
Just on that, do you think, just to jump to Houston a minute and Bobby Slowick specifically, is he going to get some head coaching looks, do you think, in the offseason?
Yeah, it's funny. I was reading an article by Bill Barnwell about, and I wrote one about the Patriots last weekend, which I would like to revise now, having watched that abomination in Indianapolis. Yeah. But, one thing he mentioned, which I had done as well, is the nepotism involved. How Bill, his circle seems to have gotten smaller rather than bigger. It's all guys who played for him or have coached for him or are his sons. In the front office, he's got Al Groh's son and Ron Wolf's son. So there's that. And then he said they should hire someone like Bobby Slowick, and Bobby Slowick's father is an NFL coach for years and years. Bob Slowick, like, can't look somewhere else? I'm not saying that he's not good, and he's done a great job in Houston and all. I think that's. He deserves a lot of credit, as does D'Amico Ryans. Mm. That this team could be 5-4 at this stage of the season is completely unthinkable.
Let's look at some of the other potential head coaching spots that could be opening up for guys like Bobby Slowick with with both Arthur Smith and Ron Rivera in particular under fire, right? We've got a few questions on both of them. We'll go to the Pablo man who asks, do you agree that Ron Rivera is costing the team several wins with his awful decision-making and poor clock management? So Rivera is under fire for, we know what we get with Ron Rivera, of course, seasoned vet, loves to roll the dice, doesn't he? But there is this thing that's plagued him, I guess, through his career, which is specifically, well, he's one of those coaches that struggles with clock management, right? And decisions.
Sometimes, yeah. And you know, and earlier in his career, he was one of the most conservative coaches. And then all of a sudden, he started going for it on fourth down, and he got the Riverboat Ron thing. To me, Ron Rivera is a sort of stability is what he offers. And, you know, and he plays a certain defensive scheme. It's hard to figure out whether the defense is better or worse after getting rid of Sweat and Young in the fire sale. It looked better the week before. It looked worse this week. But it's not good in the back half either. And offensively, the decision to go with Sam Howell can make plays. And he's got some playmakers there as well, but they've got problems in the O-line. I think they probably need offensive coaching. My read on this was that unless Ron Rivera had a big season this year, that he would go at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. The new ownership, I think, was doing the smart thing. Let's let it play out this year. We came in late in the summertime. Let it play out and let's see what we got. Mm-hmm. You know, what do we think of the general manager? What do we think of the head coach, the assistants? What do we think of the players? And then at the end of the year, we'll work that out and decide if we have to move on.
But
and
to bring those together,
that's what they will do.
It's a bit of a loaded deck, though, isn't it? If they're dealing Chase Young and Sweat mid season, and then saying, okay, let's see what you can do. Let's see what you can. It's got 7 and 10, 8 and 9 written all over it.
Yeah, but I think the way it played out was they had enough depth on the D line, and they were losing these guys anyway at the end of the season, or having to pay them big money to keep them. So it was better to get rid of them now because they know they need to rebuild in some senses. It was money ball, basically.
Yeah.
Bill obviously is, you know, they're not going to fire. I can't see Bob Kraft firing Bill Belichick.
No, I totally agree. There's no way that's going to happen.
If he goes, he's going to realize it's time for him to go.
If Belichick goes, does he take another head coaching gig somewhere else? Does he go upstairs and take a, you know,
quite possibly, quite possibly. I don't know if anyone would hire him as a GM.
Would he insist though on GM?
Oh, he probably would insist on bringing somebody, you know, bringing one of his pawns, somebody he knew well, to do that.
I want to see Belichick at another team. I'd love to see that.
Wouldn't it be amazing? I'm amazed Brandon Staley keeps his job after the game.
Interesting you say that. Here we go. So I mentioned there were a few coaches that the gang have got in touch with about it. Incidentally, just very quickly, because I think you'll appreciate this, Iron Mike. Mark on the Ron Rivera angle says, if Rivera gets the sack and is replaced by his current OC, will that put to bed the notion that you should keep your friends close, but you'll be enemies closer?
Yeah, that's a good one. Not unused during the season, but yeah, it's interesting because I didn't mention, you know, Bieniemy, but obviously he will be someone they're evaluating as well with that in mind. You know, he for years he was considered a potential head coach, and part of the problem was he was in Andy Reid's admittedly large shadow for such a long time that nobody knew if it was actually his offense, you know, what his role was in that. And so to give him the gig as an offensive coordinator was almost like auditioning to take the next step up to be a head coach.
He's been one of those guys that we've scratched heads as to, he's been getting the interviews, hasn't he, over the last 3-4 years.
But
doesn't get the gig. And I guess sometimes that is maybe an underestimated part of it, that the significance, the importance of the interview. And some guys are just not going to interview well, even though it doesn't mean there wouldn't be a good fit for the head coaching role.
Yeah, there's an inherent bias toward young people. In the coaching world, the hot young names. And there's an obvious bias toward the coordinators of teams that get to the Super Bowl, for example. I think probably Ben Johnson Detroit is going to be very, very high, whether the Lions get to the Super Bowl or not. But he's done such an impressive job offensively. You know, he had offers or inquiries last year, decided to stay in Detroit as the offensive coordinator. But I think second time around, he'll be a top name. As I said, I can't see Brandon Staley staying. Obviously, the Raiders have a job open unless Antonio Pierce runs the board.
He's got a shot. I mean, if he does, I think they'll seriously look at him. Well,
They'd have to. But whether
if they make the playoffs, maybe that's more realistically. If they remain in playoff contention till weeks, 17, 18, then they've got to look at him.
Yeah. What they'll be thinking, or what Mark Davis will be thinking, so to speak, is, whether it was just the Josh McDaniels release that helped him along, whether taking this team to another 9-8, 8-9 season, and on the playoff edge is actually what they're looking for, is actually enough to do that. Now, if you'd make a better team, could he continue to do that? That's a good question, which I think, right now you'd be saying trending that way based on what's happened in the last couple of weeks.
So you mentioned, Staley, Sam Eldridge got in touch about Staley. If Staley isn't the most incompetent head coach in the league, who is, asked Sam? And then Inter Jimbo on Head Coaches Under Fire on that tip. Inter Jimbo says, what do the Falcons do about Arthur Smith? Is he the real deal? Or should we move on? He's under, a lot of criticism right now.
Yeah, in the last 3 weeks or last three games, he's lost to three guys making their first start. Levis, he lost to Kyler yesterday, and Josh Dobbs in Minnesota. Yeah. And, his offense, I can't figure out what they're doing. I'm not sure the players can figure out what they're doing. They drafted for him. Kyle Pitts and Drake London, the big receivers, but they don't seem to use them at all. Neither of them seem to step up and become, targets.
How much of it is the quarterback situation though? Because Riddick obviously came back with Heinicke going out injured, but Riddick clearly was not at the races for the first half of the season. And Heinicke, we love him and he's explosive and frenetic to watch, but he's a top
yeah,
to backup,
and,
right?
And it's funny. It's funny because, like Howell in Washington, who I think is probably playing better than Ridder is, they're guys who were taken later in the draft, and you wanted to be able to bring them along before they became your starters. But they were both kind of promoted based on the end of the season last year where they got their auditions. Ridder was supposed to be a really good fit. But then they don't run, part of his game is running. They don't run him. I'm not sure he gets the benefit of the offense in passing terms. Heinicke is what he is. He comes in, he makes great plays. He makes crazy throws. He's great as a backup quarterback to energize, kind of like Minshew.
Yeah.
And watching the Patriots, their defense is playing really well, but they had no one who was actually quick enough to actually catch Minshew. The number of times they had him penned in behind the line of scrimmage and were unable to stop him throwing the ball, and he was getting completions out of it, which, it was pure Minshew madness. It was kind of like Russell Wilson against the Bills. The Bills had him trapped a lot, and Russ was getting out of trouble and launching passes.
Spinning around.
So that's, I'm trying to think of Dennis Allen might, his job might be available. Carolina might be thinking about maybe we made a mistake with Frank Reich because they really don't seem to be going much of anywhere. They had a big game from they got a big game against them from DJ Moore to lose to Chicago. But, I thought even at quarterback, I thought Bryce Young, CJ Stroud was more of a Frank Reich quarterback than Bryce Young was. And I thought at the time that maybe they would have been better off with each other's quarterbacks. Stroud may well have proved me wrong on that, but he might have fit in better at Carolina. But it's hard to fire a coach after just one season.
Getting more common than
teams like Arizona do that.
Well, speaking of Arizona, interesting. The Kyler Murray situation is going to be interesting, isn't it, in terms of what they do? And I guess a lot of that depends on how well he plays in the second half of the season. But assuming they're going to have a top two, top three pick, and actually, one of our questions from the Patio mailbag, White Sox UK, suggests that will a resurgence under Kyler push them completely out of the tank for Williams race? Caleb Williams, of course, one of the top quarterbacks coming out. There are two or three that we think will go first round in the 24 draft. But let's assume that it kind of levels out and they have the opportunity to take one of the hot quarterbacks in the draft. Would they do that? Would they move on? They paid Kyler a lot of money, of course.
Well, they did it with Josh Rosen, if you remember.
Yeah, sure.
And they fired Steve Wilkes as well.
Right, and Kingsbury came in and at the same time. So
yeah. I heard people saying it was stupid to play Kyler because you're going to kill his trade value. Mm. But Kyler's carrying a huge contract, which lowers his trade value immediately. So my feeling is if you wanted to get rid of him, you have to play him to prove to teams that he's still got enough, you know, to a team that needs a quarterback to take. And I didn't see a lot of that apart from what we know is his greatest strength, which is the breakdown game. You know, he won that game with a, you know,
pick up ball kind of stuff.
That kind of great circle route scramble that got him 13 yards and kept the play alive. So, you know, so there's that. I dislike listening to talk about tanking because, you know, it's really difficult to do effectively. You can't play the game.
Yeah, I don't think anybody tanks. I mean, I don't think it consciously tanks, but I guess the point is what he's getting at is
you can shave some points easily enough, which Roger Goodell pointed out back in 2012 before they decided gambling was okay after all.
But I think this idea that they're going to be continue to struggle even if Murray elevates them a little bit, that, you know, that does give him a conundrum when it comes to the draft. I guess it would make sense to stick with Murray for another year if this is on the base he plays well for the final phase of the season. And if you do have a top three pick, because that's going to be in high demand, wheel and deal a little bit, pick up some collateral and strengthen elsewhere.
Yeah, and the Bears could be in a similar position, you know, having to decide about just Justin Fields and what they do there. And I suspect a team, you know, there's more value probably in trading down, you know, especially I'm not convinced Caleb Williams is an automatic first pick overall.
Well, he's had a difficult season, isn't he?
He's had a really difficult season. And you know, you've got May and you've got Phoenix and.
Yeah.
You know, and it might be that I don't see another instantaneous number one pick out there at the moment. But I haven't looked that much for them. But there's good value there in trading down, you know, as the Bears discovered. They're gonna have picks this year, and they've got DJ Moore, which is, you know, and Carolina will be floundering because in order to make that rookie coach succeed, you need to be able to build around him. Mm. You know, you need to give him the tools he needs to succeed, which is we've talked about it so many times in the past, but it's the number one quarterback conundrum is that he tends to go to a terrible team and that can hurt his development. And in some cases stunt it completely, like David Carr, for example.
He's the blueprint of that, isn't he?
Yeah. Peyton Manning had a terrible rookie season. But I mean, actually it wasn't a terrible rookie quarterback season. It was a good one, but he was basically a 500 quarterback at that
compared to where he ended up. There are a number of teams that, you know, like in that currently in a top 10 pick spot that could look to move on up, right? Green Bay might well. The Rams. Stafford's back for the Rams, by the way.
Yeah, but the Rams need to move on from Stafford.
They've got to move on. So there's a few teams that could be sniffing around. Mike, we're out of time. We've got to get out of Dodge. Before we do, plug your column this week. Of course, Mike Carlson FMTE is the Patreon column. So go subscribe to Mike on that and you'll get the deep dives.
Yeah, plug last week's. Last week's was a pretty interesting one because it was a very long dive on Bill Belichick and the Patriots.
I'll go read that.
and looking at the back. This week's will be a Olapadira, a kind of mix of various observations and some great quotes. I'll give Runaway right now that I picked up listening to commentary. I can't remember who was the, I should have written down who the announcer was, but when you're watching Red Zone, it's hard because they switch away. But it was talking about the impact that players make. And the guy said, they do impact your team when you have key players impact. Okay.
It sounds like something Ben said to me at the airport bar where we were watching Red Zone. Brilliant stuff, Iron Mike. I can't.
Oh, one more thing.
One for the road. Come on.
The Rams signed Carson Wentz.
There we go. Yes, they did.
Keep that in mind when you're looking at the spreads this week.
Well, like I say, I think Stafford might be back. God, they will hope he is. But anyway, yeah, that's a very fair point. Carson, brilliant stuff. I'm looking forward to seeing you. Well, I'll see you next Monday. And then, of course, Thanksgiving, we'll be together at that Passyunk Avenue watch along in Waterloo. Like I say, get involved with the competition. Win a table there. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Tag the NC show that you've done that. And we'll pick our winner on the Friday show. So keep your ears peeled for that. The Edge Rush show, me and Prop. Oh, just two shows this week because I, Mike and I were a day after, you know, usual drop. So let this one percolate. And we're back Friday with some Edge Rush and FFS action. All right, Mike, look after yourself, bud.
Okay, mate. Did you want me to pick a winner?
Pick a winner for what?
For the letter.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We do need to pick a winner. Yeah, for the Passyunk Avenue mailbag. What was your favorite?
Yeah. Give it to AI.
So Mr. Robot wins it. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, and before we go, Nat.
Yeah.
I had to pick a winner for the Passyunk mailbag and give it to Mr. Robot, our AI friend.
Oh, well, that will put a smile on ChatGPT's face, and Mike, with Mr. Robot winning that. Maybe he'll split it with ChatGPT. What can they do with 25?
Buy me a drink.
They can come to that. They'll probably both be there at the Passyunk Avenue. Watch along. Brilliant stuff. Look after yourself, bud. See you, my man.
Okay, you too, man.
Social Podcast Network.